I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake's decision to fire Police Commissioner Anthony Batts came just a few hours after release of a scathing after-action critique of Batts' handling of April's unrest by the Baltimore Police Union. The mayor shot back at the union for its report, then fired Batts, she said, in the interest of public safety. A triple homicide Tuesday night in the city was the latest in a long season of violent crimes that Batts was unable to contain. Deputy Commissioner Kevin Davis has taken Batts' place. We'll hear excerpts of my Tuesday interview with Davis, get reaction to Batts' dismissal, and hear more about the police union's report on city leadership. All on Midday, after the news. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Midday Show. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. A lot to talk about today. Off the news of yesterday, Baltimore's police commissioner, Anthony Batts, fired by Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, replaced by Deputy Commissioner Kevin Davis. A note about Kevin Davis. He was on our show Tuesday. We had an hour-long conversation with him the day before he was appointed interim police commissioner. During this show, during this hour and next hour, we'll be hearing excerpts from that interview. So in case you didn't catch it all on Monday, you can hear some of what Kevin Davis has to say about law enforcement in Baltimore, the handling of the unrest in April, and the surge in violence that has occurred since then in the city throughout this hour and next. And you can join us at any time. We'd like to get your reaction to this news. Baltimore citizens are anywhere. If you have something to say about what's been happening in our city, there's a lot to unravel here, and we shall do that during this hour and next. 410-662-8780 is a local number. Our email address, if you'd like to address comments or a question that way, midday@wypr.org. In the second hour of our show, we'll be joined by Bob Cherry. Bob Cherry is the immediate past president of the Fraternal Order of Police. He'll be with us in the second hour of the show to talk about how the whole day started yesterday. We start this show with P. Kenneth Burns of the WYPR news staff with we'll sort of walk through yesterday, Kenny, and we'll go down to the Fraternal Order of Police news conference. It was at about 10:30 a.m. in Hamden Woodbury and wherever that is, Buena Vista Avenue.
Buena Vista Avenue.
Okay. And they released what they call the after-action report, after-action review of the management of the Baltimore riots. A photograph on the cover of this report showing Baltimore police officers in riot gear in front of the smoking and burning CVS pharmacy at North Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue. I came by there this morning. Anyway, it was in that neighborhood this morning. So let's start with yesterday morning. This was only 24 hours ago, and let's review the review.
Well, the review was pretty scathing, particularly of now former Commissioner Batts as well as the command staff. In fact, it did more criticism of commanders and Batts than it did the mayor. It should be noted on the cover, and I tweeted it out yesterday. It has the famous misspeak of the mayor and the quote that they gave room to destroy, and that has since been defended and debunked in some instances.
Let's just review that for a moment. This was on the Saturday night, April 25th, the mayor speaking to reporters during or immediately after the situation in downtown Baltimore.
It was immediately after the unrest downtown. It was at City Hall. It had Freddie Gray's twin sister asking for everyone to calm down.
I remember that.
Yeah, and she said,
and at some point in the mayor's colloquy, she said, give room to destroy. And
right.
People have focused on that phrase.
Particularly the critics of the mayor and really a lot of, quite frankly, conservative talk show hosts from around the country have been using that quote to kind of attack the mayor.
Okay, so the Fraternal Order of Police takes this quote, which the mayor has, you know, walked away from, says she never told the police to give demonstrators room to destroy. She's
right.
Denied that. But they put it on the cover of the report, which kind of, sort of sets up the narrative that we'll find in the tone of that report.
Right. It's, I mean, like I said, scathing tone, damning in some instances, talked about how there were the phrase, do not engage with the rioters. It talked about how they didn't have the proper equipment, how there was no plan, how FOP President Gene Ryan asked the commissioner to call the National Guard, and he was turned down. And it literally is a laundry list of issues that the FOP had. And keep in mind, this was done based on, from what I gather, surveys and interviews and follow-up interviews. I tried reaching out to ask what was the methodology behind this review. I have yet to get a response back from their PR people. They also tried to get the communication tapes of what happened during the 25th, which was that Saturday, and Monday the 27th following Freddie Gray's funeral. And according to them, they only received one tape from one channel out of what they say is several channels.
Now, that was a point of criticism leveled by Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake after this report came out, saying that the report was premature and that the FOP needed to have more information before it put out this review.
Right. The city is officially still in the midst of a review. And one of the things that came out from that was a review of all the riot equipment that they have and come up with a way to test this equipment on a regular basis.
Okay, so that was in the morning, and we went over this yesterday with Melody Simmons. We get off the air at 2 o'clock, and the mayor is criticizing the FOP, as we just said, for putting out this report. And then we get to 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
And by the
like
way,
that.
I was a half a block away from a press conference that Commissioner Bassett called to talk about the independent review from the police chiefs. It was going to take place on the red bricks in front of the Hilton. And all of a sudden, we get the advisory that Commissioner Batts is being replaced by now interim Commissioner Kevin Davis.
Okay, so Batts was actually downtown preparing to talk about this. One of two reviews is going to be conducted, one by the International Association of Chiefs of Police, right?
Right.
So he was still active yesterday. There was a note that he was going to call a press conference.
Right. This email came out around 1 o'clock, 1:30, and everyone was setting up. And all of a sudden, around 4 o'clock, we get the advisory to go to City Hall because Batts had been fired.
Okay. Now, the mayor says, is quick to say that she isn't firing Batts out of reaction to the Fraternal Order of Police review, albeit came just a few hours before she did, in fact, fire him.
Right. The specific quote was, "Those who know her would not suggest that she would placate the FOP." Of course, there's some who are criticizing that. But even before that, there were people calling for his resignation. Council Vice President Ed Reisinger, Councilman Carl Stokes had done it earlier yesterday. In fact, Reisinger was about to join Bill, the Baltimore United
in leadership development
to call for Batts' resignation.
Okay. And so the mayor said she was doing this out of a concern for public safety because of the violence. The violence is out of control. We're seeing numbers that we haven't seen for years in Baltimore City in terms of shootings and homicides.
Yeah, that was part of it. But the big chunk of it was the focus on Batts had became a distraction because, and as you know, ever since the unrest, we've seen this back and forth between the FOP and the city and the police commissioner over his leadership. And that had became a distraction. Reisinger says similar things. Carl Stokes had said similar as well.
Okay, so I'll question that from my audience here. Do you think that Batts had become a distraction? I mean, Commissioner Batts has been doing what we call damage control or damage repair ever since the riots. He went out and he apologized to police officers. He's issued statements about how things were handled. He disputed the claim that there was a stand down order by explaining that there was a hold the line order. That was done last week. And
right.
Interim Commissioner Davis talked about that as well. So I wonder, you know, was the focus really on Anthony Batts? I'd like to hear from our listeners. That's one question I have for our listeners today. In your reaction to the dismissal of Anthony Batts, did he have to go in order for Baltimore to get on with things? Kenny Burns, while you're here, I'd like to get a couple more reactions to this. We'll start with Councilman Brandon Scott. Oh, he's going to call back in a few minutes. We'll get him about halfway through this hour. But State Senator Catherine Pugh is with us. Nice to have you on the show again, Kathy Pugh.
Thank you.
So you've listened to Kenny just sort of recite what happened yesterday, another tumultuous day in Baltimore, another police commissioner gone, a new one in his place. So what's your reaction to the mayor's decision?
Well, let me just say, I'm not a Monday morning quarterback, but let's say, but having said that, but certainly this has become a distraction, you know, the commissioner has become a distraction in terms
of... So you think he was a distraction?
Well, I think if you can't get police officers to move and do what they need to do, something's wrong with that picture. You know, I had an opportunity to, you can call it an opportunity. We were looking at some issues as it relates to our Criminal Justice Commission. And I went into the city jail to look at where young people are being placed. And one of the comments from one of the folks that were inside the jail, working inside the jail, was that people aren't being arrested. And not that we want folks arrested for any wrong reasons, but they had noted the decline in, you know, the arrest on the streets of Baltimore. And again, you know, I don't want folks to be so fearful that when they look at a police officer, they, as in the case of Freddie Gray, that you turn and run away. But for those who are working inside those institutions to say that, you know, the place is, you know, something is going on in Baltimore City, and something obviously is going on in Baltimore City. But I'm also mindful of the fact that police can't exactly stop crime unless there's community cooperation. A van pulling up, folks jumping out, firing is not something that the police can control. But at the same time, we can have police and community relationships that can build a better Baltimore with folks working together.
All right. Just on that word distraction, mm-hmm. maybe it's semantics with me. A distraction means you're involved in a scandal. There's something going on that you, you create a distraction and you can't do your work. But what you're really saying is that Batts did not have the confidence of the rank and file police anymore.
Right, because you can't say that he wasn't
in fact,
the streets.
Were they planning on having a vote of no confidence in the commissioner?
No, there wasn't talk of that. I know the Vanguard was talking about possibly doing a confidence
vote. The Vanguard
vote,
Society. Mm-hmm.
But as far as the FOP, they were not going to have that confidence vote.
Okay. And yesterday, Gene Ryan was asked that, right? The president of the Fraternal Order of Police was asked after this report was delivered whether he thought you asked him. I heard you asking that question.
It was myself and Zuzon Malvo from CNN. We were both pressing him about what does the FOP think about the commissioner, because the report just scathed the commissioner, and at the end questioned whether or not he could get the job done. And I asked him, do you want him to step up or step down? And essentially he said the commissioner should step up.
Yeah, and that's the way I heard it as well, that they wanted to see the commissioner step up. But, you know, when you see the police commissioner in the streets every day, and I've seen him in the streets every day trying to console the community, trying to build confidence that the police wants to work with the community, and you don't have that same kind of feeling in the rank and file and the people that you pay to protect the communities on a daily basis, something's wrong with that picture. I mean, I've seen him in community meetings. I've seen him walk in the streets, but perhaps in some of the neighborhoods where people really felt that there needed to be more police presence, I don't think people felt like they were safe.
State Senator Kathy Pugh is with us. Kenneth Burns of the WYPR news staff. We asked for a reaction from our listeners. 410-662-8780 is the way to reach us. And I asked for some other reaction from around the community. Reverend Dante Hickman, pastor of the Southern Baptist Church, joining us now by phone to get his reaction to the decision of the mayor to fire the police commissioner, Anthony W. Batts. Reverend Hickman, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here, Dan.
Yeah, what are your thoughts about this change?
Well, substantively, I can't really say that I had a problem with Commissioner Batts. As Senator Pugh said, he was very visible, I think, in the community, made his presence known in various meetings, and I did not have the larger detail of what was going on in the ranks of the police department. I think strategically, if he was going to be dismissed, it probably should have happened sooner rather than later, like maybe on the heels of the Freddie Gray incident. I think the mayor, following the impulses of the community and community leaders, is perhaps a step in the right direction for her. However, Dan, I just think it's preposterous to think that we can police our problems away. Absolutely. And that any commissioner that we get is what Baltimore needs in order for the violence to go down. I think it's a combination of things, that opportunities and jobs need to be given. And quite frankly, when you look at our communities, our neighborhoods, they look hideous, and they really create the kind of ethos that sustains this type of violent activity. So it's, I don't think it's a police problem.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Reverend Hickman. My drive this morning took me up Monroe Street. Where did I go from Monroe Street? I ended up on North Avenue. And
Fulton.
Yeah, up Fulton to North Avenue. And, I got a long way to go in that part of town, west side of Baltimore.
Absolutely.
Kathy Pugh. Reverend Hickman, thank you for your comments. What do you think about what the Reverend said?
I think he's absolutely right. I mean, you can't talk about crime and not talk about the economic problems or the systemic problems that are occurring in those neighborhoods, in our neighborhoods, in neighborhoods that have been left unattended to, where you see board of house after board of house. It's hard to tell people that we're working on the city when you walk out of your door and you see the same thing day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And I think what people have a tendency to forget is because oftentimes we want to say these are poor people, but we don't remember that there are also people who have bought their homes, own their homes, aren't going anywhere, invested in those neighborhoods, and have no intentions of leaving.
That's right.
There's some elderly people who live in those neighborhoods who've been there for 40-some-odd years, but we've not paid the same kind of attention to those communities that we've paid to others. But I think that this has been a wake-up call to the city, to the mayor, to all of us as leaders of the city, that we have a greater responsibility, and it's to all of the citizens of Baltimore, and it behooves us to fix those issues inside those neighborhoods if we want our city to be better.
Now, Senator, would it be fair to say that that part of town has not really recovered since 1968? Because particularly during the unrest, even locally, there has been a lot of comparisons to the riots of 68.
Let me just say, having come here from Philadelphia and not knowing all of the history of Baltimore, but learning about the history of Baltimore and now knowing what that part of the city suffered, it obviously has not gotten the same kind of attention that it needs to get. But at the same time, it's not just the devastation. It's not just the economic crisis. You know, even when we go to fix some of our problems, we don't look at all of the issues that are surrounding a community. For example, look at where we place drug treatment centers and look at the economic issues and the impact that that has in a neighborhood and a community. And we can talk about that.
Okay. We'll need to take a little break. As I promised, during this hour and next, we'll be hearing excerpts from the interview I conducted Tuesday of Kevin Davis, deputy commissioner, now interim commissioner of Baltimore City. We didn't know that at the time. Well, we knew something was up, as I explained in my column today, but we didn't know for sure what it was. But anyway, I asked him the same kind of questions I would have been asking Commissioner Batts had he been here. Except in this case, with Kevin Davis, we go back to Prince George's County, where he had a long career and rose up through the ranks there. Prince George's County Police Department underwent a 10-year Justice Department review, emerged from it in 2009. That review was over the use of excessive force by police officers there. I asked him about that. Then I asked him about, you know, what are you going to do here in Baltimore? What needs to be done in Baltimore City specifically to restore some trust between the police and citizens?
A pastor once told me that the community won't trust its police department until the community knows its police department respects them. So what we set about doing in Prince George's County is gaining the respect, or ensuring the community knows that we respect them, and then they trust us and give us information. The Crime Stoppers program in Baltimore is certainly an effective one, but we can do more with it. Most of the calls we get into Crime Stoppers have to do with the distribution and sale of narcotics, and that's important for us to know about, but we get very little information about violent crimes. Most of our murders in Baltimore City are daytime murders. 70% of our murders in the city happen outdoors. So we know we have witnesses, but we need to do more to encourage people to partner with us.
That's Kevin Davis, now the interim commissioner of Baltimore City, from our interview the other day. We'll take a short break here, welcome some phone calls, more reaction from you to the mayor's decision to fire Anthony Batts. 410-662-8780. Here's another excerpt from my interview with Kevin Davis, that now the interim police commissioner in Baltimore City, when I asked him about the surge of violence in May, what had caused that? What had led to that?
30 pharmacies were looted. 288,000 doses of prescription drugs were suddenly on the streets of Baltimore. And there was some some territory disputes. There still are some territory disputes amongst the drug organizations in the city, amongst the gangs in the city. Now, does that sound like the police department's blaming the gangs and the drug organizations for the spike? They're certainly part of it. We can't ignore it. But, you know, what we have to reestablish in the community is that trust that you spoke about, Dan, and we're going about that business, particularly in the Western District, where we've seen a big spike in this violence.
I then asked them, you know, how do you reverse the trend of homicides in the city?
We focus on the violent repeat offenders. We, you know, every time we try to look in our crystal ball, we see violent repeat offenders that need the attention of the government. And I want to stress government because it's more than just the police, parole and probation, the courts, the prosecutors, and the wraparound services that we talked about earlier, Dan.
We'll go to some more of those excerpts throughout this hour and next. Again, that's Kevin Davis, interim commissioner. Did you get to hear from him yesterday, Kenny Burns?
Yes, we did. He his message to the rank and file, which is, I'll walk with you, I'll serve with you, I intend on being there with you every step of the way, kind of backing up an olive branch, if you will, to the rank and file compared to his now predecessor. He repeated his focus on violent repeat offenders. And he also praised Batts as a friend, a mentor, and a reform-minded police commissioner.
Kathy Pugh is with us, State Senator Kathy Pugh of Baltimore City, who is chairman of the city Senate delegation, also majority leader in the Senate of the General Assembly. So it's hard to have a complete understanding of who Kevin Davis is. We know about his background here. What do you think about this selection of putting him in place?
Well, you know, again, that's a mayor's selection, but let me just say this. I think it's important for us to emphasize that police alone can't solve the problems that Baltimore City's facing. And police confidence and neighborhood confidence in the police is important. But, you know, those are the same things that I heard Bat say. You know, in terms of the need to be walk among the community, to talk with the community, to restore trust and faith in the police department, and to have the same faith in with the police department that the community will work with them. So it's not just the police alone. I mean, they can't do it by themselves. And he talked about the kind of programs, the Crime Stoppers program that we had. I remember the days of Operation Identification, Neighborhood Watch, all of those things that community leaders were engaged and got involved in. You know, police cadet programs. You know, the PAL program. We don't have those relationships anymore with the police department. I was glad to see the state's attorneys, junior state's attorneys program, because we've got to get folks feeling, you know, I remember the time, and I'm sure you do, that if you ask 30 children in a classroom, how many people want to be police officers?
Yeah.
One third at least
would
raise their
hand. Yeah.
Police
yeah.
officers and firemen.
Right.
You don't see that today because people don't feel the same way about the police. But again, you know, I don't think that we can just depend on the police department to solve our problems, but we do believe that the police department has to lead and the policemen must feel confident in their leadership so that we can change the things that are not being done, walking the street beats. And again, I saw Bats walk street beats with neighbors and community leaders. So let's just hope that this is a step in the right direction.
Kathy Pugh, let me ask you this before we go to the phone lines and take some calls here. Was it clear to you even before the Fraternal Order of Police put out this report yesterday that Anthony Batts did not have the confidence of the rank and file?
Was it clear?
Was it clear before yesterday?
Well, I think that you had organizations, as you well know, Build and a number of organizations calling for.
In your mind,
so in my
State
own mind,
Senator
Catherine Pugh's
yeah.
mind, I believe that the police commissioner was trying to restore faith and confidence in the police department. I saw the conflict. I saw the conflict between the unions.
I mean, with the unions, with the officers responding to
but
him.
But you can't have that if you want to move a community forward. You can't have the police department not responding to the person who heads
were
the
department.
Were they
not responding because of the police commissioner? So he had to go.
I believe it was the right decision
all
at
right.
this time.
Let's take a couple of calls. Phil, we'll start with you. Phil, thanks for calling Midday. Phil,
yes,
you're on the air. Go right ahead, please.
Okay. What I was going to say to you was I believe that it was politically expedient for the mayor to let Anthony Batts go. For some reason, I believe that the tail is wagging the dog when it comes to the police officers who are supposed to serve and protect the community, and they worked at the pleasure of our administration in Baltimore City. These individuals created a culture that has now been exposed by technology. And unfortunately, they're not willing to change and adjust and adapt to the changing needs in the community. And here's a very interesting point. When you have 72%, 73% of your police officers do not live in Baltimore, and 10%, 12% don't even live in the state, they're not connected to the community. They don't view these people as their neighbors, the people that really mean something to them. It's just a job. And so when you take a look at a situation like that, it's difficult for the community to feel trust when you are treated as a stranger.
Thank you very much, Phil. What about that, Kathy Pugh? You want to respond to that?
I think, you know, that's...
Because it's actually counter to what you're saying.
No,
you're saying that we need to restore trust so police can solve crimes with the help of people in the community. And I question whether the police believe that's possible themselves.
Well, let me just say...
Whether
they
care
well,
that,
let me
about
just
the...
Say, let me just say this, because I believe that some of what Phil said is absolutely correct. When we looked at, and you know I'm chairing, co-chairing this commission along with Kurt Anderson... One of the things that we learned...
On what? Just explain to our listeners.
Okay, we learned that...
What is the commission you're chairing?
The commission is a criminal justice commission looking at how do we create better policing across the state of Maryland. And one of the things that we learned, 83% of our state troopers are white. I mean, and that doesn't mean that because you're white, you can't do the job, but should it not be representative of the population? And a large percentage of our police department in Baltimore City, as Phil just pointed out, doesn't live in the city. In Philadelphia, where I came from, if you worked for the city, you lived in the city. Now,
that was required? That was mandated?
Yes. Teachers, police officers, everybody lived in the city.
You think such a thing is possible in Baltimore?
No, it's not, because the ACLU has sued, folks have sued and said, you know, people should be able to live wherever they want to. And, you know, there's some concern as it relates to that. But I think that a large percentage of our police officers should live in and work in our city, because I think that it does help to develop a better relationship with the community when you know the community that you're serving in.
What did the report from the FOP say about retiring police officers, officers looking to quit the department?
They're looking to quit the department because...
What did the report say? Did they say they were... Did they cite a number or...
It didn't say a number of officers that were looking to retire or quit. It just said some of them felt like quitting or retiring because they did not believe they had the trust of their commanders.
Okay, and this was from surveys that the FOP conducted of the membership.
The surveys or whatever. Again, I still don't know. I'm still waiting on the email from the PR firm because reading the report yesterday, it's hard to tell. Was it just surveys? Was it just interviews? And they also mentioned focus groups. So was it all or are they using the terms interchangeably? That methodology is a key factor.
I want to go back to Reverend Dante Hickman just for one more comment along these lines about police and the community and this question of trust. Another word we hear about is respect and restoring that. And, you know, this has been a really tough time for the city here. I mean, the word broken, the word fractured is used to talk about this relationship that that has surfaced here in the wake of the death of Freddie Gray. What do you do about that, Reverend Hickman? How do we fix that crack?
I think in many ways that the police are, you know, unfairly treated and regarded in this instance of trust in the community. I think that our communities, if we would admit it, in Baltimore are oppressed socially and economically. And the police to our residents look like they are part of the oppressors. They're in the system of the oppressors and those who are there to keep them down and to keep them from getting ahead. And so they're always going to be, there's always going to be an oppositional relationship as long as we keep that oppression intact. I think Bernie Sanders is commanding thousands of people across the country because he's beyond the identity politics and the distractions. It's about economics. And until we fix that crack of economics and really financially empower people, we're going to see these kind of symptomatic problems and blaming the police and continuing these adventures of missing the point.
Reverend Hickman, thank you for your time today.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. Reverend Dante Hickman of Southern Baptist Church in East Baltimore. In case you don't recall, the community or senior center, combination community senior center that his church was constructing burned in that fire on April 27th. Councilman Brandon Scott's going to join us in just a second. Kathy Pugh, did you want to say something more?
You know, again, I don't think we're blaming the police. I think that we have to restore confidence in the community, in the police, and the police confidence in the community. But the economic issues, the social issues, the justice issues are real issues when you talk about how do you turn a city around and get people working together across the aisles, black, white, you know, Native Americans, Latinos, we're all Asians, we're all in the city, and we should all be in it together.
You know, last time you were here, we were talking about the governor's decision to kill the Red Line through Baltimore City, a project that a lot of people were looking to for jobs, some 9,000 jobs. That was one estimate, the number of jobs that would be created over a period of several years, 10 years perhaps. And then economic development that could come along along the Red Line route, and that's gone. And last time you were here, you were going to make another effort on that. But that's the kind of thing you're talking about. The city can't do this alone.
Absolutely, the city can't do it alone. It's state help. It's federal help. But at the same time, and I want to say this about the Red Line, you know, we've asked for a conversation with the governor, and he said not in this form. I'm still willing to have – I want to have a discussion. That was what he said, not in this form. So what does not in this form mean?
You mean the Red Line.
The
Red Line would not be approved under its
not
current
in,
design.
Right. And so we need to know what that form is. But more importantly, it is an economic opportunity, but there are some other economic opportunities in Baltimore, whether it is working on how do we fix the problems in that part of West Baltimore, or what we're going to do with State Center and the other projects that are on hold as it relates to Baltimore City. We've got opportunities here. We just need to get people working and moving.
Let's go to Brandon Scott, City Councilman. Scott, thank you for making some time for us today.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Did you see this coming, the dismissal of Anthony Batts? Were you a little surprised the mayor did this?
No, there's no shock value here. I'm not surprised at all.
Mm-hmm. So when did you get a sense that this was going to happen?
For me, I think that you can make the strong case that this could have been done before the whole Freddie Gray incident, because we were already seeing a significant increase in homicides and shootings. And then when you have this perfect storm of negative stuff that's happened after, with the increase of violence, with the issues with him and the police, the issues with the police and the community, and everyone just seemingly going back and forth from playing high school games and in the media, and when while people and children are being shot and murdered on the streets, which is what we really should be focused on, not a surprise to me at all.
You think the commissioner should have been fired in March or earlier?
It wasn't my decision. It could have been. Yeah, the commissioner could have been fired then, just based off the crime numbers. You know, that could have happened. But look,
the crime numbers seesawed, didn't they, Councilman Scott? They went up and down.
Yeah, they seesawed, but we have been above last year since the beginning of the year. So, you know, and significantly going the wrong way for quite some time. And then after the uprising, of course, we've seen this crazy amount of homicides and shootings. But again, Dan, like I always say, though, what we have to realize is that, look, heavy is the head, the weight is the crown. But listen, the person at the top is not the only person that has the responsibility. And also, one man, one woman, one police commissioner, one elected official, one senator, one councilman, one preacher, one teacher is not going to solve the issues that we have in this city.
Thank you very much, City Councilman Brandon Scott. Your reaction, welcome here as well, 410-662-8780. An email from Steve-O to Dano. He says, Dano, I heard Mayor Rawlings Blake say on the radio earlier today that she did not know that all the police stations in Baltimore were closed 12 hours per day from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. While I commend her forthrightness, why should people not believe she is out of touch as mayor? Well, let me just say this. I don't know how many people in the city knew this. This was reported in an op-ed that appeared in the Baltimore Sun on Monday by a young man named Connor Meek, who will be on our show Friday, on the Midday Friday show. He was mugged. He went to report the crime. He figured, I'll go to the police station. He found out the police stations were closed from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. This was news to a lot of people, okay? Maybe the mayor should have known that. Maybe city council members of certain districts should have known that. Maybe state senators or state delegates should have known that. Maybe newspaper columnists should have known that. I didn't even know that. I went to the Western District Police Station after dark once in the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. I can't remember the last time I did that, and that was for a community meeting. Kathy Pugh, you've probably been to community meetings.
Many community meetings.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to cut the mayor a break there, but I'll just say I think this was an eye-opener for a lot of people around town. Kenny Burns?
In fact, that was the straw that broke the camel's back for Council Vice President Ed Reisinger. He was among the first to call for Batts' resignation.
Because the police station was closed?
Right. He saw the op-ed in the Sun paper this past week. In fact, when I asked him how he felt about Batts being terminated, and I quote, "I feel great. I feel great for the citizens of Baltimore because I think it's way overdue."
Okay. That's Ed Reisinger. Well, you might ask the councilman, you know, why didn't you know the police station was closed from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.? A lot of people just call 911, right?
Right.
Or an officer comes to their home, 311, or an officer comes out and makes a report somewhere on the street or in a parking lot or something. I'm not sure I want to cut the mayor a break there, but still, or the police commissioner. Even the deputy commissioner here on Tuesday, Kevin Davis, wasn't sure what the policy was there. But anyway, that policy has changed now. So, Helena Hicks, Dr. Hicks is calling us. It's nice to hear from you, Helena Hicks, one of our community leaders here in Baltimore City. And we wanted to get your thoughts on this, too. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to say that I am a part of the Northwest Community Police Council, and I've been a member for a long time. And the new Western District police captain came out of our district. I've worked with the police as a community person. I've been in this area 50 years, so I've worked with them a long time. And I said, as a policy person, a person who's earned her living, got her education in policy, and worked as a member of a community interested in public policy and looking at the problems in the community, that it takes more than just a police commissioner or a mayor. One thing you have to have, and I learned this from one of our former mayors, and that was Schaefer, who taught me that if you don't keep in touch with community leaders as a governing body, you are never going to know what's going on. And I think that there is a real disconnect between city council. Some council members are better than others. The mayor's office, the revolving door of people in executive positions, and there is no constant flow of information. And so, yes, the police commissioner got fired. The police commissioner is only a tiny bit responsible for all that happened. I lived through the riots of 68. I worked them. I was in housing then. And I know what happens with people on the street when they get fed up and they have no other resources. I'm currently working in Sandtown, Winchester. And there's a disconnect. If you neglect people, if you disregard community leaders' input, and it can't be a ministerial group, mm-hmm. It can't be any kind of community group, because they don't come to the immediate communities and get information. I don't know where the information comes from. But those of us who are out there on the firing lines with the community day in and day out, in our monthly community meetings and in our police community relations meetings every month, we know what's going on. And when I go down to Sandtown, Winchester, and they tell me things like they don't see anybody in a cooperative fashion. The new commander has been on the streets down there. She has tried to come to community meetings, even though she's brand new, because I met her on the street. She's surprised to see me down there.
Dr. Hicks, let me just ask you this, because our time is short here. Was the mayor getting pressure from community groups to fire Anthony
Batts? Well, she wasn't getting any from ours. I'm part of the 41st District, which is one of the largest voting districts in the city. We have a Northwest Police Community Relations Council that meets every month. And so nobody came to us. I've checked with those members of the council because they're community leaders. None of us were pressuring her to file the police commissioner. Okay. So I don't know where the pressure was coming from.
Dr. Hicks.
But you've got to get a consensus of all communities. It's got to be something that communities want before you do that. We didn't know about it. We might have been able to offer some other alternatives. But when you just cut community people out in terms of major decision-making, then you wind up with this kind of situation. Some people supporting Bats and saying it was not right. Other people saying he needed to go. Nobody has looked at all that led up to it. I'll take you back to 1990.
All right, Dr. Hicks, I'm sorry. I have to take a break here. I thank you very much for your comments. Helena Hicks from Grove Park, actually Northwest Baltimore, longtime community activist here. But her point about, you know, how does a mayor make a decision? Well, different mayors make decisions different ways, right? Sometimes it's just a straight political decision. You get your staff together and you say, all right, we got to do this today. Or you bring in a group of community folks, elected officials who have been your allies, and you ask them for advice. I'm not sure exactly how this was done. But anyway, it wasn't done with Dr. Helena Hicks' input. But we thank you for hers here on the Midday Show. A quick email from Rain, who says the mayor has made a mistake in firing a good man who was looking to tackle root causes of policing problems in Baltimore and achieve a culture change. Who runs the department, the FOP or police commissioner? The FOP is out of line. The mayor is afraid of the FOP. That's pretty simple and obvious. This is the Midday Show. Please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. If you want to send an email like that one, midday@wypr.org. Welcome back. 410-662-8780. Back to the phone lines for more comments about the mayor's decision on Anthony Batts. Joshua in Baltimore, you're up next. Go right ahead.
Hey Dan. I love your show, man. Been a long time listener. Hey, look, you know, firing the police commissioner really is a non-issue. He couldn't do anything about the problems that's plaguing Baltimore because it's really culturally a problem with Black Americans. I'm a Black American. You know, I feel like we really need to get our kids in check. We've got too many single mothers walking around here, parents not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So, you know, all this violence and crime is perpetuated by all that, you know. And I don't know when people are going to start taking responsibility and say, hey, look, you know, this is something that we're causing and that we need to fix. Mm. You know, we can easily point the finger at the mayor, the police commissioner, you know, and echoing what your councilman just said earlier, it's just bigger than them.
Joshua, I go back to the Fred Bielfeld era. He was police commissioner under Sheila Dixon and then under Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and he left. He retired in 2012. A lot of people shaking their heads, scratching their heads, wondering why we lost Fred Bielfeld in 2012, because he had been an effective commissioner, came up through the ranks in Baltimore City. And his focus was bad guys with guns. How many times did you hear that phrase, bad guys with guns? He had a focus, a targeted enforcement strategy that seemed to pay off for the years that he was commissioner. I think there was an uptick there in violence at one point, but not like we're seeing now, not like this surge we're seeing now. So it can be done with an effective police strategy. You have to also have people to cooperate with you to help you out. Witnesses, people who live in these communities that are most affected by crime, being willing to talk to the police, that is an essential ingredient here. But Kathy Puse, I want to ask you about that specifically. Susan writes in to say, I'm hearing platitudes about all in this together, get people working and moving. But what are the, specifically, she wants to know, what are the recommendations for how to fix this broken relationship between the police and the citizens?
Well, I was in the Western Police District about a week or so ago, and Bats walked in. I mean, and so there probably were about 40 community leaders, along with other members of the neighborhood that were there. And it was a conversation with the police commissioner came in at the last minute, but what was introduced was the new in-charge person of the Western Police District. The new commander who actually sat there and had a conversation with the community about what it was that she needed to hear from them. and how she wanted to work with them. And I thought watching the community approach her and talk about the various issues in their neighborhood. I mean, some things are very simple in terms of, you know, how do you keep people from standing in front of our houses or sitting on our steps and those kinds of things. We don't see you walk. We don't see police walking our neighborhoods. We don't see police in our communities on a regular basis. How can you step up the patrols and so forth in those neighborhoods? What is it that we need to be doing in order to share information with you and at the same time feel safe? I think those kind of community conversations make a difference in terms of the relationships going forward. I left that meeting feeling very comfortable that those people that were in that meeting along with me felt that they had a police department that was going to be working with them to help solve their problems, police their neighborhoods a little bit more than they've been seeing, because they were able to. I mean, we sat there, I think it was at least 3 hours, listening to the various complaints of the neighbors and hearing from the police department what they wanted to do.
But it's not a novel idea.
No, it's not.
This goes on in the districts all over the city.
Yeah, I'm talking about when you talk about Helena Hicks. I remember in the days of Schaefer, when our job was to be in the community every day. You know, when you left City Hall, you didn't go home. You left City Hall and you went to a community meeting.
Oh, this back then you worked in the Schaefer administration.
Yeah, but you went to the community, you listened to their issues, and you would come back trying to figure out what programs that you could create that would help make a difference. And that's where Operation Identification was born. Neighborhood Watch programs were born.
Here's Joseph in Baltimore up next. Joseph, welcome to the show. Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about the difficulty of being a policeman in Baltimore City. You know, they want the cops to come in there and clean up crime and without bullying people around. But the community itself knows who these people are. Look, they know who all the gang members are. They know who belongs to what gang. And all these gang members, in order to become a gang member, they have to murder somebody. This isn't a little club. These people are really hard criminals. And, you know, the cops, they're not getting any information from the community. And that has to be addressed, because until that happens, these people are going to be living next door to and down the street from you, and they're the ones that are murdering your friends and your relatives.
Mm-hmm. Thank
and
you.
I just want to make that comment about what's going on in the community.
Thank you very much, Joseph. We're down to our last minute for this hour, but we will continue the conversation into the second hour of our show. We'll be joined by Bob Cherry from the Fraternal Order of Police, and also Munir Bahar of the 300-Men March will be joining us in the second hour. We'll go to Kim in Baltimore. Kim, try to be brief, please.
I just agreed with what you said about Bielfeld. I just feel like Bass was brought in with a new message. From the very beginning, just for the mayor, he kept saying new strategies and brought in consultants where it seemed like we had strategies working. And it just never, as a resident, it just never really made sense to me as to why he wanted new crime-fighting strategies. And I think it's just hard to trust with the amount of turnover that's happened with this mayor across all agencies and her cabinet and her deputy mayor that, you know, she just must be really hard to work with.
Yeah, there's been a high turnover in that administration, I think more than others we've seen, certainly. And, I remember asking Anthony Batts, I didn't want to insult him, but I said, can we keep the phrase bad guys with guns? Because that seemed to be a simple idea, targeted enforcement, violent ex-offenders who are in the community, call them in under the ceasefire idea, the ceasefire model, you know, call them in for meetings with get parole and probation to bring them in for little talks with prosecutors and police about what's going to happen to them if they commit further crimes, if they want to get out of the life. Here's an opportunity to get a job or training or get your GED and get on with life and not be a problem in your community anymore. You know, I'd like to see a little bit more of that. And we're going to hear some more excerpts from Kevin Davis. He talked about that. He said, we cannot arrest our way out of this. That's another thing Bielfeld said when he came in. Kathy Pugh, State Senator Kathy Pugh, Majority Leader of the Senate in the General Assembly from Baltimore City and Chairman of the City Delegation, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And P. Kenneth Burns of the WYPR News Staff, thank you for your help with this.
Thank you, Dan.
We're going to take a break. There's more of this conversation coming up in the second hour of our show. I'll have more excerpts from my interview with the new Interim Commissioner of Baltimore City, Kevin Davis. So please stay tuned for that.